I would like to talk about a very important shaila that I got this week that I think is extremely relevant, comes up every so often, and it could be that it seems there is not so much clarity on it. So I got a question from somebody who works in his professional life as a speech language pathologist, not in this community. And he said he's reaching out on behalf of a Jewish Orthodox patient who has a speech impairment that requires him to use text-to-speech technology on his phone to communicate with others. And the question that he has is about using this technology and this device on Shabbos or Yom Tov. What does the halacha have to say? So this is a very important question because somebody who is speech impaired and does not have the ability to communicate without some sort of device or a tablet, the question is, what are they supposed to do on Shabbos? Now, there are different variations to that question. The question that he's asking is, what does one do when the only way that they can communicate is by typing on a phone or a tablet, and that will then put forth a message? There is a different question that really requires a whole separate shiur, which is about, let's say, an ALS patient that also has some kind of way to communicate. Unfortunately, as we know, as the terrible, terrible disease of ALS continues to progress, we know that sometimes they, or very often, they lose the ability to be able to communicate verbally, and they have a brand new technology, which is extremely effective, which is which allows a ALS patient to use their eyes to be able to blink in a certain way at a screen, and it knows how to read their eyes very well, and that will be able to then type up a message based on the way they're blinking their eyes. So that is a separate question in and of itself. Would an ALS patient be allowed to use that on Shabbos? Is that considered a malacha just by blinking one's eyes? It seems to be it's kela achar yad. It's not normal to write that way. But on the other hand, it is normal for that patient. So maybe you'll say that is not called a shinui. That's not kela achar yad because I'm doing the normal way that I would communicate. But here, that's not the question. Here, the question is, if I have someone who has a verbal communicative issue and is unable to then communicate verbally and now has to use a device to be able to communicate whatever they need, would they be allowed to use that on Shabbos? This is a very important question. What? Their phone. It's their phone that then types it up. I'm not sure if it shows up on a screen, or it sounds from what he's describing that it then speaks based on what this individual is saying.
If it's TTS, that's definitely like using the phone speakers.
No, but he's unable to speak.
No, like, you would type it.
Right, so it could be.
The phone speakers would do the rest.
So it's possible. So I don't know. Let's say, for example, that it types it up as well. I assume it types up on the screen, and then it may speak. So I'm sure it types on the screen, and that is the assumption that I have. So how do you break down this question? It's a very important question. The first thing that we need to think about is, what category of chole is this person on Shabbos? Are they a chole at all? After all, they're not sick. There's nothing acutely wrong with them. They have a chronic condition. Nothing's going to get better or worse over Shabbos. We know that when we have a chola sheyesh bo sakana, if we have somebody whose life is in danger, of course, we're mechalos Shabbos, we do everything for them. Not only mechalos Shabbos, the Shulchan Aruch says that one who goes and gets involved in saving a life on Shabbos is doing a mitzvah, and you have nothing to do tshuva about. You have nothing to feel guilty about. So a member of Hatzalah, a doctor or a nurse who goes and provides care for an individual who is in very great need on Shabbos, of course, should be doing that, and they should not hesitate at all. They should do whatever is necessary to help rehabilitate that patient and get them back to a healthy life. And even, says the Gemara, if there is a suffik pikuach nefesh, it's not only if somebody's life is going to be definitely in danger, even if we have a possible concern that somebody's going to lose their life or that one's life is in danger, we would be mechal Shabbos for them as well. We would not go looking for a nachri. We would assume you should do it yourself. However, the question is, are there any other categories of people that maybe we can do certain activities on Shabbos for, which may not be included in what we refer to as a pikuach nefesh situation? So the next category that is described in Shulchan Aruch, or one of the categories, is a chole she'ein bo sakana. Now, what is a chole she'ein bo sakana? Let's first translate the words. That means a chole whose life is not in danger. Now, how would you categorize, how would you classify that person? What exactly is that? The Ramban, the Rajba, the Ritva, all the Rishonim and the Mechaber, based on that, the Mishneh Berurah, everybody writes the same thing, that it means that because of his illness, whatever it may be, he is mutala mishkav. Mutala mishkav. He has to be bedridden. So say, for example, somebody who has a very intense migraine, is unable to focus, is unable to sit at the table, has to go take a nap, has to go lay down, has to excuse themselves, can't have a lot of noise. that would be a mutar l'mishkav. And as a result of that, there are certain activities on Shabbos that would be permissible. Now, are they going to die from a migraine? No, they're not going to die, but they will be extremely uncomfortable, and they will be in a lot of pain until the migraine goes away. So therefore, there are certain things that we would allow for somebody who is considered mutar l'mishkav. If you stop there and say the definition is just mutar l'mishkav, the problem with that is it doesn't really fit, because the Shulchan Aruch adds in a few more individuals who fit into this category of chole she'ein bo sakana. For example, says the Shulchan Aruch, hakol cholim etzel tzina. Everyone is considered a chole when it comes to being cold. So let's say we forgot to turn on the heat in the house on Shabbos, and now everybody in the house is freezing. It's in the middle of January here in New York, and it's been very, very cold outside. And we forgot to set the clocks properly, and now everyone is cold. So would we be allowed to do anything? Now, no one's going to die. We're not in Siberia. We'll be very uncomfortable. Maybe we won't be able to sleep properly. Would we be allowed to do anything on Shabbos for that? Says the Shulchan Aruch, you would be classified as chole she'ein bo sakana. Now, what does that mean? Mutar l'mishkav? I'm not going to be in bed all night. Actually, I'm not going to be able to sleep at all. So what it means is, you have to redefine it a little bit. It doesn't just mean mutar l'mishkav. It means someone who is not functioning in their normal capacity that they otherwise would be able to. Now, of course, if somebody has a little bit of anxiety, that doesn't count. But somebody who is extremely uncomfortable because it's freezing, and as a result of that, when it comes time to go to sleep on Friday night, they're unable to sleep, that would be a chole she'ein bo sakana. And similarly, the Shulchan Aruch says that children, big discussion how old the child is allowed to be, many of the poskim say it depends what kind of child you have. But certainly, let's say a 2 or 3 year old who's throwing a temper tantrum. So that would be considered a chole she'ein bo sakana. He's not in danger. Ignore the child, and it will pass at some point. But says the Shulchan Aruch, no, that's a chole she'ein bo sakana because he's not functioning in the normal way that he otherwise would. And therefore, there are certain things that we would be allowed to do for that individual who fits into that category. Now, what exactly would we be allowed to do for such an individual? That is a major dispute among the Rishonim. And in fact, the Shulchan Aruch, very unusually, the Shulchan Aruch here quotes 4 opinions in Siman Shin Chav Ches in Hilchos Shabbos. He writes, there are 4 different opinions in the Rishonim. What would we be allowed to do for a chole she'ein bo sakana? Again, when you have a chole whose life is in danger, do everything. Now we're talking about someone whose life is not in danger. What would we be allowed to do for such a person? 4 opinions in the Shulchan Aruch. The bottom line of what the Shulchan Aruch seems to say is that the best thing to do is try to get a non-Jew to do a malacha derabanan for that individual. Okay, what if you don't have a non-Jew available? Then the Shulchan Aruch says, second best is that I myself should do it, a Jew should do it, either the patient or someone else. And the Aruch HaShulchan writes, there's no difference between me doing it as the patient or somebody else doing it on my behalf. Once there's a heter to do it, there's a heter to do it. It's the same thing. Sometimes you have I once saw a member of Hatzalah who had to do something, and he said, why should I do it? Let the patient do it. And I said, pressing a button or something, it wasn't a big deal, but he felt uncomfortable. And I said, no, if there's a heter to do it, then you're both allowed to do it. If there's no heter to do it, then neither of you are allowed to do it. The patient can't do it, and you as the member of Hatzalah can't do it either. But it doesn't matter. So the second best thing to do is to do it al yidei shinoi, either al yidei nachri or al yidei shinoi. What did I say wrong? Okay, so then hold on. So either al yidei nachri, second is al yidei shinoi. If neither of those are a possibility, then the Shulchan Aruch says, we pasken like the Rishonim who say that a Jew would be allowed to perform a malacha midrabanan without a shinoi in order to take care of a chole she'ein bo sakana. That is the bottom line in the Shulchan Aruch. We would allow you to violate a malacha derabanan for a chole she'ein bo sakana. Now, how would you... Grama is a big discussion where it fits in. Is grama better or worse? And it's not so easy. Everyone thinks it's so easy to get a grama. It's not so pasha to get a grama at all. Or to define what a grama actually is. It's not so simple. But leaving that aside for a moment, my question now is, how would you classify this individual who has a speech disability and is unable to communicate verbally? Well, they're not sick. There's not a chole she'ein bo sakana. So we certainly can't do any malacha d'oraisa for them. They're not functioning the way they normally would. What are we going to tell this person? Spend 25 hours of Shabbos not communicating with anyone? So what would you say? Maybe the answer is yes. Now, maybe the answer is yes. Maybe there should be some kind of hybrid approach, which means for essentials, you need to use the bathroom and you need help and you need someone to come help you get there, or you need to eat something because you're very hungry, so maybe we should allow it for that. Maybe we shouldn't allow it for other things. So this is a question. So let's say the person doesn't have the capacity to be able to learn sign language or something like that. That's what we're talking about here. So what would you say? So this is a very important question. I think that it is fair to say that this individual would be considered, for sure, chola she'ein bo sakana. He is not able to function normally at all because we are not allowing this patient, this individual, to be able to use the device that they normally use. Now, we then have to go a little bit further and ask ourselves, well, what is it that we would allow a chola she'ein bo sakana to do? So as we said, the Shulchan Aruch says, either you can have them have a malacha done by a nachri, have a malacha done midrabanan ayidei shinui, or to have them do it themselves. I don't think a nachri is relevant here because a nachri doesn't know what's inside of my head, because otherwise they would just do it for me. I don't think a shinui is possible here either because they don't have the cognitive ability to be able to start typing with their knuckles. So I would say then you go to the third approach of the Shulchan Aruch, which is that we would allow this individual to type on their own on the device. Now, that sounds very simple. My father had a little bit of an issue with it for a very complicated reason in his understanding of Chol HaShem HaSakana, but he added today a very tremendous chiddush, what in my opinion is an unbelievable chiddush. So my father said today that he thinks maybe we can actually classify this person as not a Chol HaShem HaSakana, but one notch above that. The Shulchan Aruch, based on the Gemara Maseches HaAvodah Zarah, describes what happens when you have someone who has a Sakanas Aver. Now, the poskim say in our generation, the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, the Tzitz Eliezer, they all say, we don't really have a concept of Sakanas Aver anymore. We assume, I mean, the medical professionals in the room know a lot better than I, but I assume if somebody has a blood clot and they're going to lose one limb, it could effectively kill the whole body, right? We don't say that it's going to stop at that limb. So whenever we have something that endangers an entire limb of the body, we assume that that also endangers the entire body itself. If, let's say, somebody fractures a bone, so what would you say? They can lose the ability to use that part of their body, or sometimes can that cause a clot that can cause something else? Things can happen. So it's hard to really figure out what is a sakanas aver that is limited to losing the ability to use that aver, but the rest of the body will be fine. It's hard. What? Amputation on Shabbos, but that's pikuach nefesh. If we don't do the amputation...
No, I'm saying if a guy got into an accident and he amputated part of his arm on Shabbos...
So why do you have to amputate it?
He amputated it. He cut it off.
Right.
Okay? So
yeah.
Once I tie it off, it's not in Sakana's Chaim anymore.
So now?
Okay, but I'm saying there's no... Is there a question that he... I mean, is it now becomes Sakana's... Once the bleeding stopped... You have time.
So sakanas aver classically means that if I don't give some kind of acute medical treatment to this limb, I'm going to lose the use of the limb entirely. Like the Gemara says, somebody has an eye infection. If you don't take care of the eye infection, it can ruin your eyesight forever. So the Gemara says, that's sakanas aver. There are certain malachas you'd be allowed to do. Malachas derabanan, you'd be allowed to do for sakanas aver. So my father took it a step further, and he said, a number of months ago, I had a shaila about a woman who was going through a uterus transplant. And the question was, would you be allowed to be Mechala Shabbos to receive the uterus on Shabbos if you get a call that they want you to come into the hospital? Now, that is a very important question. Take, for example, if you have someone who gets a call on Shabbos that they should come and receive a kidney, that would be Pikuach Nefesh. Without the kidney, the person's going to die. They can't live on dialysis forever. The kidney will give them the... Now, they're not going to die tomorrow, but over time, they're not going to be able to sustain it. If they have the opportunity to get a kidney, of course they go in. If someone's waiting for a heart transplant or something like that, of course you're Mechala Shabbos. Question here is, if I live the rest of my life without the uterus, I'm not a chola. There's nothing wrong. Unfortunately, I can't have the ability to have children, but I'm not a chola. Now that somebody's giving me the opportunity to have a working organ in my body that I otherwise don't have function in, or don't have at all. So this woman doesn't have a uterus and is now going to have one donated by another person, which is Niflos Habori in the first place. But now that that's the reality, would we allow you to be Mechal Shabbos for that? Would we allow you to be Mechal Shabbos for that? This was a very big shaila a number of months ago that I posed. And my father said he thinks that would be defined as Sakanas Aver. How is that Sakanas Aver? Sakanas Aver normally means when I have eyesight that's going to be lost, or the use of a limb that's going to be lost, but here the limb doesn't exist. So what do you mean, Sakana Saver? My father broadened the definition of Sakana Saver to mean if I have the potential for an aver to work in my body with a certain function, and now because it's Shabbos, I'm not going to be able to have that opportunity, that is also sakanas aver, even though the aver doesn't exist in your body. Amazing. That's an amazing chiddush. I told it over to Rav Amar when he was here. That's when this whole thing was going on. He was not at all in agreement. He didn't think that that definition was correct. He said he thinks there are other reasons he should allow it. He said the emotional distress of a person who you're going to tell them, oh, you got the call on Shabbos that you're ready for a transplant. I'm sorry, you can't go. And they're going to have to give it to the next person and they'll have to wait another 5 years. That's something that is a very unreasonable ask of a person. And therefore, he said the emotional distress that will put someone into may also play into it, that may allow them to violate Shabbos in certain ways also. Now, that's also an interesting psak, that for emotional distress, we would allow someone to be Mechal Shabbos. Is that really true? So that is a very interesting shaila that came up in the days of the Aderes. The Aderes was the father-in-law of Rav Kook. Aderes has an amazing story of how he came to where he is. Where he was at the time. He was the Av Beis Din in Panevish for 19 years. Then he always wanted to move to Eretz Yisrael, and he got an invitation to come be the assistant chief rabbi to Rav Shmuel Salant, who was already an older man. He was the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim, and he invited the Aderes to come move to Yerushalayim to be the assistant chief rabbi, with the understanding that at some point, Rav Shmuel Salant would get too old to continue on in the job, and the Aderes was going to take over. He comes to Yerushalayim. Unfortunately, the story goes that he lost, I think, two or three children along the way. The journey was filled with all kinds of viruses and all kinds of problems. He lost two or three children by the time he got to Yerushalayim, and he was there. And Rav Shmuel Salant had such an arichas yamim that the Aderes died before he ever got to get to the position that he moved for. So he served as the assistant chief rabbi, never actually became the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim, but he was a great, great tzaddik, a great gon. And he has a shaila in his sefer in the Over Oreach. He wants to know that there was somebody who had a fire in their house. And he said that there were ksavim of Torah Shebaal Peh in there. He had a lot of chidushei Torah. He was always writing chidushei Torah on his own. But he also had a Sefer Torah in there. And the question was, what should we save on Shabbos? So, of course, a Sefer Torah is more important than my Chidushei Torah. Sefer Torah is Sefer Torah. But on the other hand, the Aderes said, what's going to be? My whole life's work, everything that I've been writing my whole life, is there now going to go up in smoke. Sefer Torah gets ruined, you go write another one. If all my Kisvei Yad, if all of my manuscripts get ruined, there's no replacement for that. And I will go into the deepest depression you can ever imagine. And the Aderes wonders, would we be allowed to violate a malacha in order to make sure that you don't fall into a very deep depression? That is an unbelievable shaila. And Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach quotes it in a tshuva, and he discusses it, and then Rav Nevin Sal discusses it even further, and he says he thinks that Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach retracted from his original. The bottom line is, it seems that there's a very strong possibility that maybe you would be allowed to. Now, don't take this out of control and say, oh, anytime I'm annoyed about something, I'm allowed to be Mechal Shabbos. This is severe emotional distress that we're talking about. So that is a factor that sometimes would be relevant and sometimes we would allow. So the chiddush my father said here is, maybe we should categorize this individual who doesn't have the ability to speak. He doesn't have a mouth to communicate with for whatever reason. There's something wrong that he's unable to communicate. And his only way to communicate is through his phone or through this device that will then speak on his behalf. Maybe that would be considered, maybe that would be defined as sakanas aver. He has a mouth, and we're not going to cure his mouth, but the function of his mouth he doesn't have. And this is, in some way, the function of his mouth. That is the only way that his mouth can work. And therefore, my father felt maybe there's room to argue that this person would be considered not just a cholo she'en bo sakana, but a notch above. He would be considered a sakanas aver. If we don't allow you to use this, the function of your mouth is not going to be functional at all on Shabbos. Your ability to communicate is hindered, is stopped entirely. And my father felt maybe that would be the broader definition of sakana sever, which would allow us to violate certain malachas as well. To me, that was an unbelievable chiddush. I told my father today that I saw Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, I'm sorry, not Reb Shlomo Zalman, Reb Nevin Sal has ha'aras, has comments on the Mishneh Berurah. So in Hilchos Shabbos, he has an incredible comment. He writes, some people have terrible acne. Now, some people care, some people don't care. Who are the people who care most about their acne?
Women.
What age women are the people who care most?
Teenage
women who are dating, or not yet dating, but girls who are going to be dating, who want to look really nice and are going to be very uncomfortable that they have acne all over their faces. So the question is, sometimes they go to a to a dermatologist and they want to have some kind of treatment, and they'll be given some kind of cream, and every day they have to put on this cream. Now, what do you do about Shabbos? On Shabbos, you're not allowed to put cream on. That would be mimarech. That's a malacha. So what do you do about putting on cream on Shabbos? So the answer really should be, you're not allowed to put on cream on Shabbos. Would you be allowed to put it on Ali Dei Shinui? No, you wouldn't be allowed to put it on Ali Dei Shinui. Says Reb Nevensal, yes. If you're a single girl and you are dating and you think that this is going to impact your shidduch and this is going to be something that really bothers you, Reb Nevensal writes, he thinks it is mutter. Why? Why is it mutter? Listen to the chiddush. He says, that is considered a sakanas aver. Your face is not functioning the way it should. Your face is supposed to be beautiful. And unfortunately, your face is not able to be beautiful because you're not able to put on the cream. And therefore, he said, if you are a single girl and you are concerned that not treating the acne is going to cause you a problem in your relationships, in your possibilities of getting a good shidduch, in somebody being attracted to you, that is a problem. And therefore, Reb Nevensal paskens that would be considered a sakanas aver, and we would allow a malacha d'rabbana to be performed even on Shabbos, because the functionality of one's face is not working. Now, sakanas aver of one's face, I would say, if something happens and I have an infection in my teeth, that's a sakanas aver. My mouth is not going to work properly. If I have something, my cheek is all blown up, that's a sakanas aver. I'm going to lose the function of that. But acne on my face, I would never have imagined that the function of one's face is that it should look beautiful, that other people should be attracted to it. That's amazing. But Reb Nevensal writes this chiddush. My father appreciated it. I told him today. But I think that it's a very interesting chiddush. Beyond that, what? That's what he says. Beyond that, what's interesting is actually, Reb Shlomo Zalman in the Tshuva, when he talks about that person who's going to be so depressed about him losing all of his manuscripts, so you'll say that not doing the malacha on Shabbos is what's killing me, and therefore we should be allowed to do malacha to save the manuscripts. Reb Shlomo Zalman says, no, what's killing you is you. You should get over yourself. You shouldn't be so depressed over just a manuscript. It's just a manuscript. Don't be so depressed. And don't blame it on the malacha of Shabbos. The blame should be on you. You shouldn't go so crazy over something like that. That's the perspective that he has. There are others who disagree. But that's similar to what you're mentioning. If a young man has acne, yes, it bothers him, but it probably wouldn't bother him to the same level as it may. Again, this is an overgeneralization, but it's something that Reb Nevensal does talk about. Beyond that, there are cases in the Shulchan Aruch and Hilchos Shabbos where he writes that we would allow a malacha to be done even for someone who is in mitzdayer harbe. He's not very sick and he's not in concern of an infection, but he is in a tremendous amount of pain. So say, for example, it says, Mapis Mursa, quoting the Gemara in Maseches Ksubas, I believe. The Gemara talks about Mapis Mursa. What does that mean? It means if someone has a something that's filled with pus on their skin somewhere, and it's very painful. It hurts a lot. You have to sometimes, I don't know what the right word is.
Lance.
What?
Lance.
Lance?
Yeah, Lance.
Whatever, you have to pop it or whatever you have to do to make yourself feel some relief. Now, are you allowed to do that on Shabbos? Normally, no, but says the Gemara, and the Mishnah Berurah quotes it, Rashi and Tosfos explain what's the malacha here, but they say it's an issur d'rabbanan. We would allow you to do an issur d'rabbanan, not because your life is in danger, you could take care of it on Sunday, but I'm in a tremendous amount of pain. Or say, for example, the Mishnah Berurah writes as well in Siman Shin Chaf Ches, if somebody has a thorn that gets stuck in their skin. Now, it depends what kind of thing it is, but if there's no concern that it's going to get infected, it's just terribly painful. So says the Mishnah Berurah, I'd be allowed to take it out, even though I know that by taking it out, I'm going to remove blood from the skin as I take out the thorn or as I take out the splinter. Why would it be? Now, splinter is not a good example because you can get infected from that. But something that we're not concerned about an infection, or they can easily take it out after Shabbos. But if I have to wait another few hours till Shabbos is over, it's going to be extremely painful. Mitzdar Harbe would allow us. There are other examples that are given the Mishnah Berurah in a different siman. Shin Tes Zayin, Mishnah Berurah talks about, let's say I have a parush. A parush means I have an insect that is biting me. So normally the way to get rid of it is to go like this, to flick it off. That's fine. That's not a malacha. But what if it's stuck on and the only way to get rid of it is to actually catch it? A tick, let's say, is a good example. You have to catch it, right? You have to grab it off and you have to do the malacha of tzeda, right? You're actually catching an insect. So the Rishonim say you'd be allowed to do the malacha of tzeda, midirabbanan, because imminyonitza, whatever, it doesn't matter. But it would be allowed to do a malacha d'rabbanan in order to get myself away from that terrible pain that I'm feeling from the insect that is biting me. What do you see from there? When you have a mitzdar harbe, there are many exceptions that are given in the Shulchan Aruch that we would allow a person to violate a malacha d'rabbanan as well. I don't think there could be a mitzdar harbe more, not, it's hard to rank, but then telling somebody for the next 25 hours you are not allowed to communicate. And anything you need is your problem. And you need to just stay exactly where you are and be happy with whatever you have, and nobody's going to talk to you. No one's going to communicate. That is a tremendous mitzvah harbin. If we find in the Shulchan Aruch that we would allow a person to be mechal Shabbos for other cases of mitzvah harbin that seem to be a lot less of a mitzvah than this. Somebody has a splinter or a thorn that gets stuck inside. Again, it's painful. It hurts a lot, but it doesn't bother a person as much as sitting there for 25 hours not being allowed to communicate with anyone and not being able to talk to anybody about what you need. That would seem to be a very serious mitzvah harbin, which would also allow. Let me just get to another point. What's being discussed here is typing on one's phone and then seeing it on a screen. What kind of malacha is that in the first place? That is a very important question. Is that a malacha d'oraisa? If it's a malacha d'oraisa, none of this is relevant. Because if that is a malacha d'oraisa, then we would assume a malacha d'oraisa is only allowed to be violated for a chole sheyesh bo sakana. So what exactly is it when you type on a screen on Shabbos? Is that a malacha d'oraisa or a malacha d'rabbanan? Now the truth is, in the 1800s, there was a big discussion in the Beis Yitzchak and the Achiezer of Chaim Ozer as well, early 1900s, wanted to know, how do we look at electricity on Shabbos? What category of malacha does it fall into? When I plug in an electric circuit and I now have a electrical item that is running, what malacha have I violated? So some say maybe it's a malacha of bone, some say maybe it's makabat patish, some say maybe it is molid, all kinds of different suggestions. And it's a question whether that is a malacha de araisa or a malacha de rabbana. That is a question in the first place, whether we assume that it should be prohibited mid de araisa or prohibited mid de rabbana. A big, big machlok is between the Chazon Ish and the Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Others have the discussion as well, but they are the two main ones in our generation who discussed it, whether using electricity in general would be a malacha d'araisa or d'rabbana. Rav Asher Weiss is actually of the opinion, he has his own original opinion, that it should be d'araisa for his own reasons, forgetting about all the other poskim. But I've asked him many times when questions have come up, and he says, I'm usually very confident about my psukim, but maybe in this case you should be choshes that the Minchas Asher is wrong, because if you're going to say it's d'araisa, there are many patients that are going to have a lot of problems because of that. So why should a patient have to uphold the standard of Rav Asher Weiss's opinion when you have great gedolim who say otherwise? So let's assume that electricity is midirabanan, and I'm oversimplifying this whole sugya. This should be a sheer into of itself. How do we look at electricity? What is it all about? Let's say it's daraisa, let's say it's dirabanan, whatever that is. How would you look at somebody who's typing on a screen? There's a malacha of kosev on Shabbos. Now, the only time ksiva on Shabbos is considered to be a malacha is when it's a ksiva shel kayama, when I'm writing something and it's going to last. So say, for example, they made those pens in Eretz Yisrael, which are very controversial, where they have disappearing ink after 24 hours. So they have it for a doctor or a nurse who's trying to chart all the medications and all the things that are happening in the hospital. So they have pens that will write with ink, but then after 24 hours, they will disappear. And somebody thought that that would be a great idea, because then after Shabbos is over, they'll have a doctor go back and rewrite everything or type it up, and then it will disappear. So it's a ksiva shena shakayama. Rav Shlomo Zalman was very opposed. He said, if it's mutter for a doctor to write, then the doctor should write. And the problem is going to be, let's say there's a backlog Matzah Shabbos, and then by the time you get to it Sunday morning, I have plenty of patients that I didn't expect to see, and then it turns out I don't have any of the documentation. That is a problem. So Rav Shlomo Zalman didn't like the whole idea. He felt it was better that we should have a medical assistant that is a non-Jew that comes around into every room with us and documents and charts everything that is necessary to be written down. Okay, whatever. So ksiva she'eno shakayama, when I have a ksiva that is not made to last, that is not considered to be a malacha d'araisa, that bumps down to a malacha d'rabanan. What would you say when I'm typing on a screen? Would that be considered a ksiva shel kayama or a ksiva she'eno shel kayama? What would you say?
It goes away.
It goes away. Now, how does it go away?
You turn it off.
What? If I delete it. That's right. That means without any intervention, one second, that means without any intervention, it will stay there forever.
No, but you could set the phone every hour, every 30 days.
I'm not talking about fancy. Let's say I put my computer. I go to my computer, I start typing on Shabbos. Have I violated a malacha d'araisa or a malacha d'rabbana? Is that ksiva shel kayama or ena shel kayama?
As soon as the battery goes, it goes, no?
Oh, so here's the question. So Rabbi Yashiv wrote the following. In one of the Svarim called Shibus Yitzchak, that's Rabbi Yitzchak Darzi, who is a very close Talmud of Rabbi Yashiv, he wrote that if a person writes on a screen on Shabbos, if they type on a screen on Shabbos, that is a ksiva shel kayama. And he felt it was an issur d'araisa. Why? Because he said, barring me pressing backspace or doing anything else, it's going to stay there forever. And therefore, he said that would be a problem. Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach disagreed. Reb Shlomo Zalman said, number one, forgetting about whether it's going to stay there forever, this is not called a ksiva. If you know anything about how our computer screen works, and it's just pixels that are next to each other, that's not called ksiva. Right? Kosev means I write letters, but over here, that's not called writing letters. This just happens to be a bunch of pixels come out all in the same area, and it formulates a letter, but that's not called ksiva. So number one, he says, it's not even kosev, he says. He says, number one, I wouldn't even say it's kosev because it's just pixels, but beyond that, maybe it's Toveya, maybe it's something else, but it's not Kosev. But beyond that, he says, in the Sefer Nishma Shabbos, he writes the following. And I love this. I love when they transcribe English words into Hebrew. V'nikra balaz, screen saver. So they say, every computer has a feature where at a certain period, at a certain point in time, it's going to go onto screen saver, and whatever was on the screen is going to disappear. Either the computer is going to die, or the computer is just going to go to sleep and shut off. Whatever it is, it's not going to last forever. So by definition, it's not a ksiva shel kayam. It's not going to last forever. I have an interesting story about that. When Rav Asher Weiss's wife was in the ICU in Sloan Kettering, so I remember the first Shabbos that she was there, I was there on Friday afternoon, and he was very concerned. What's he going to do? How's his wife going to communicate on Shabbos? Now, what was the problem? She had too many things that she was hooked up to, and she wasn't able to communicate verbally. So during the week, she was using her phone, and she was typing on her phone and telling everyone what she needed. Shabbos, he wasn't sure. So I said to him, I don't understand. You're the rabbi of Shaarei Tzedek Hospital. What do they do in Shaarei Tzedek? This question never came up. He said, to tell you the truth, when it's your own family, you start thinking differently. And you know, whatever psak you may have given to other people, you have to think very, very carefully. Is it actually practical now that I'm in the room with the patient? So people have come to speak to me before, but now I'm dealing with it myself and I'm seeing how uncomfortable it is. And you have to reimagine, you have to reevaluate whether the psak is actually correct. So he was very concerned. So there was an ICU doctor, a pediatric ICU doctor who came down, actually happened to come down to visit. And Rav Asher Weiss asked him, do you have anything in the pediatric department that is a toy that maybe my wife will be able to use? So he said, yes. He comes back a few minutes later. Forgot his name. He's a doctor he lives in Teaneck, New Jersey. And he comes down a few minutes later. And he has a magnetic board with a bunch of magnets and, you know, the letter magnets. So they decided maybe that will be a good way to spell. Now, when you have a patient who's in the ICU who is so weak and it's hard for them to think clearly, they're going to sit there and, you know, one magnet, it's going to take them forever to say anything. So that was not a realistic possibility. So we got rid of the magnets. Then he asked this doctor again, do you have anything else upstairs? Come back a few minutes later and he brings an Etch-a-Sketch. You know, those things with the...
Yeah, that takes a long time.
That takes a very long time, much longer than the magnets. And you have to be strong to be able to do it and then to erase it. So that also was not reasonable. That was not realistic. Then they had some other magnetic thing with a pen on it. Just wasn't possible. So he asked me to go out and buy a whiteboard with markers from one of the stores down the block in the city. I said to him, I don't understand. A whiteboard with markers, why would you want that? So he said, well, it's a ksiva she'ena shel kayama. Now, first of all, she was a chalash yesh basakana anyway. She was in the ICU and needed critical care, so it doesn't really matter. But when you're trying to minimize the chil Shabbos, so you have to think about it. So he said, well, he thinks that using a marker would be a ksiva she'ena shel kayama. Why is that a ksiva she'ena shel kayama? I said to him, what do you mean? If I write on a whiteboard, unless I come later with an eraser, it's going to stay there forever. It's not going to disappear. It's not going to disintegrate. It's going to stay there. So he said, no, but the nature of writing on a whiteboard is that it's made to be erased, not immediately afterward, but sometime within the next 24 hours, someone's going to want to write something else on the board, and then you're going to erase this. That's the nature of the ksiva that I'm doing. So he said that would also be defined as a ksiva she'ena shel kayama, and therefore he felt that that would be better than some of the other options that they had. Let's say to write with a pen on a notebook would be a ksiva shel kayama, and that's going to remain, but he thought this was a ksiva she'ena shel kayama, which is a very, very important and interesting chiddush nonetheless. So here, when we talk about this individual who needs to have some kind of communication device that is going to allow them to communicate with other people on Shabbos. And the only way that they are able to communicate, since they are nonverbal, the only way they're able to communicate is via the tablet, via the device, using electricity on Shabbos, using this computer or whatever it is on Shabbos. I think the answer is, for a variety of reasons, that it would be permissible. Either because we allow a malacha derabanan al yidei Yisrael when you have a cholesh em sakana, assuming electricity is derabanan, or because maybe he's a sakanas aver, and we allow a malacha derabanan for a sakanas aver as well. Again, this is all assuming electricity is derabanan, and the ksiva is only derabanan on the screen. Big question. Big, big shaila there, not so simple. Beyond that, I would say, as we mentioned, a mitzdayer, somebody who's mitzdayer harbe, someone who has a tremendous amount of emotional distress or physical pain, we would say that there are certain dispensations we give to that individual that they're allowed to violate certain things on Shabbos as well. As we mentioned, somebody who has a thorn stuck in their skin, somebody who has a growth, a boil, something that they need to pop, something that they need to get rid of. So that's a good question. Those are one-time events, but here it's every week. Does that mean that we should tell this person that they should come up with a different solution? So, yes, I think over time, if there's a way to train this individual to do it al yidei shinui, that would be amazing. But I don't know the mental capacity of this individual to be able to do that. Now, my father said, when we spoke about this today, he said, well, if they don't have the mental capacity to be able to do that, maybe they're not a bar chayuva and Shabbos in the first place. Right. And maybe the whole conversation's off. I don't know. It depends on the individual. It depends on the patient. You have to know. But let's assume that they do have a functionality, a brain functionality, where they do understand what Shabbos is, and they are able to otherwise observe Shabbos or do mitzvahs or do other things. Just they have this complication, they have this disability, which doesn't allow them to communicate, but they need a different way to do so. So I think it would seem to me that this is permissible. My father in the end did agree that he thought so. But I would be, again, it's an interesting discussion to talk about the other case, which we'll have to talk about a different time. What would you say for an ALS patient who has to communicate via the blinking of their eyes? And is that considered to be a malacha as well? You had a question? Yeah.